West Liberty, good afternoon. My name is Allie, and you are listening to WGLZ 91.5. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. Today, we are meeting with the executive director of the NGA, or more commonly known as the National Greyhound Association. Jim Gartland is from Denver, Colorado, and he has been in the greyhound racing industry since 1975. He started out in Commerce City, Colorado, at Mile High Greyhound Park. During his career, he traveled across the country to work other management positions until he eventually became the executive director of the NGA in 2016. At the end of this year, however, he plans to retire from the NGA. In our discussion with Mr. Gartland, it will be broken into two parts. The first half of the interview will be about how Mr. Gartland was involved in the greyhound business, and then after a short break, we will come back to talk about his plans for retirement and future goals. Without further ado, let's hop right into the interview. So, Mr. Gartland, I am personally familiar with greyhound racing because of my family's history in it, but some of my peers at West Liberty may not be as familiar with the topic. Would you be able to, in your own words, explain what the greyhound industry is?
Yes, Allie, thank you for having me on. The greyhound industry is basically a paramutual racing industry. My particular portion is the National Greyhound Association. We are the official registry for all racing greyhounds in North America. We keep all the records of breeding and lineage of the breedings and all the naming of the greyhounds that go on to race at tracks, mostly now in West Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot that goes into that. And, I mean, you've been in the career for quite a while now. I mean, you've held various positions in the past 40 years. It does make me wonder, why did you initially involve yourself in the greyhound industry?
Well, it was a part-time high school job for me back in the day. They used to race greyhounds in Denver in the summertime at Mile High Kennel Club. And I took a summer job. And frankly, I fell in love with the dogs themselves. It wasn't so much the industry or the people, but it was the dogs. I just really loved the greyhounds. And so I stayed working at the track during the summer in a part-time job. And then after I got out of high school, I went away to college, and the track called me back and told me they had a full-time position for me. And that was in 1976, and the rest is kind of history.
I'm glad that worked out for you, and I'm glad that you found that passion through, like, liking the dogs, because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what the industry's really about, is just the love and passion for the greyhounds and just getting to spend time with them. So I'm glad that you found that. As I mentioned in the introduction of you, you held several positions at Mile High Greyhound Park from 1975 to 1985. Would you be able to tell me about your experiences there and how you eventually became the assistant general manager?
Yeah, like I said, I started out part-time working on the maintenance crew. I cleaned up trash mostly after the races from the night before. I did that for a couple years, then I started working in maintenance and care of the racetrack itself, and then eventually moved into the racing office, which is the actual group that puts on the races, and I was a lead out walking the dogs on the racetrack, and then I kind of moved up the ladder, being a scale clerk and a paddock judge and a racing secretary and a judge. And after so many years, I got a promotion to assistant general manager at one of the tracks in Colorado, and then in 1989, I was offered a position in Kansas City at a brand-new track they were opening there, and it was my first move out of the state of Colorado. I moved to Kansas City and took a position of director of racing at the Woodlands Greyhound Racetrack and eventually became general manager of that facility.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you chuckled when you said that, like, you had picked up, like, the trash at, like, the Greyhound track. But, I mean, that in and of itself kind of shows that, like, you worked your way up the ladder. It wasn't just a position that was handed to you. And I feel like that's something that's important to give credit for, is because, I mean, you worked hard for that position and the other positions that you've acquired down the road. So I'm glad that worked out for you. I know you mentioned your time at, like, I believe you said Woodlands, Kansas. I have some other ones mentioned as well. Like, from my research, I found that you worked at Shoreline Star Entertainment Complex in Connecticut and Victoryland in Alabama as well. You acquired a bunch of these different like management or like general management positions over the span of a couple years, but what prompted you to travel and take these roles in the first place?
Well, generally, it was the fact that people reached out to me. Not that I got stale or tired or bored with the jobs I was doing, but I got calls from other tracks and other places. They'd reach out to me and ask me if I wanted to come to work for them, and I liked moving somewhat. I was still fairly young at the time, and it was always an opportunity. Sort of, I saw it as an opportunity for advancement within the industry, and maybe to see some new things. So I took chances a lot of times. Did a lot of moving, and it was a little tough on my family. But other than that, I enjoyed all the time meeting people from all over the country and in different parts of the industry. And so, generally, it was people reaching out to me for positions, and me wanting to further my career a little bit, so I took some chances and moved on to several different places, including all those you mentioned and more. So,
of course, and I mean, as you're saying, it's very important to take those chances, take those risks. And I'm glad that people, I mean, as I had talked about how like you worked up the ladder and like, I mean, that you're gaining that recognition, and I'm glad that these people were able to see that potential and reach out to you, and you got to travel. I know traveling can be tough. I mean, I moved from, with my family, we moved from Massachusetts to West Virginia, so I understand what you mean when you say the move is difficult going from one place to another, but I'm glad that it ended up working out for you, and you ended up, I guess, gaining more experiences from the places that you traveled to. From December 2007 to May 2009, you worked at Allen Greyhound Farm in Kansas as the foreman. As our listeners may not be as familiar with Greyhound Farms, would you be able to offer insight into what Greyhound Farms are?
Yeah. Where I am now in Abilene, Kansas, is kind of known as the Greyhound capital of the world because there's so many Greyhound farms in this area. And I took a little break from working at the racetrack in management and for a couple of years and went to work on a farm here that was owned by the Allens. And basically, we would breed and raise Greyhound puppies. And so it was, I'll tell you, it was probably one of the best 2 years of my life because you didn't have to deal with humans. You got to play with dogs every day, and I loved them. And we probably had, at any one time, as many as, you know, 30 or 40 Greyhounds on the farm, and at other times, maybe 10 or 15. But at all times, they got the best of care, and we raised them until they were about a year old. And then they moved on to another Greyhound farm for training down in Oklahoma. And from there, they go on to the racetracks.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of relate to that with, like, getting to be with animals because I'm definitely an animal person. I am curious. So you mentioned that you you raise the animals until they're 1 year old and then you send them to, like, Oklahoma for training. And this number might vary, but how, like, at what age do they approximately get sent to, like, the racing tracks to, like, actually participate in races after their training?
Well, most states have racing had a minimum age Greyhound could be in. Generally, that's about 16 months. So maybe a year and 4 months or even a year and a half before they really start racing. But they start training at about a year old go through a lot of work, and then they get to the track and do some more training there before they actually start a real racing career. But generally, the minimum age is probably 16 months that they would start at a racetrack, but closer to probably a year and a half.
That makes sense. And I guess on that topic, I'm curious as well of, so they start around like 16 months. At what point do they reach, I guess, the age of like retirement? Because I know there's some, I think it's Wheeling Island Racetrack does like an adoption thing where like you adopt like retired Greyhounds. About what age do you think Greyhounds like reach like retirement age and stop like racing?
Well, it varies, but generally a Greyhound can race till they're 3.5, 4, 5 years old. There has been Greyhounds that have raced till they're 6 years old, but I'd say they reach their peak at probably 2.5 to 3 years old, and by 3.5 to 4 years old, they probably run their, you know, the best they could perform. And so around 4 years, between 4 and 5 years old is when they probably retire and go into the adoption process.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. We've been talking about the adoption process. For our viewers, would you be able to explain a little bit how that adoption process works, as much as you know about it anyway?
Yeah, we adopt out approximately between 95 to 98% of the retired racing grounds go into adoption. The process is pretty simple. They retire from the racetrack. They get spayed and neutered, as the case may be, get a health checkup and get their teeth worked on and cleaned, and then they're opened up to be adopted by anybody who can apply to adopt a greyhound. There is an adoption program at Wheeling Island Racetrack and at Tri-State, I believe. And there's adoption programs all over the country, actually, where people gather up the retired racers and they'll go to people's homes and take a look around the home to make sure it's a good place for the greyhound. And then there's a process of people go through an application to adopt. And then once they get it all adopted, they'll find out that despite the fact that they run 40 miles an hour around a racetrack and they seem high-strung and all, they're just real fast couch potatoes. They make great pets because they've been raised around other animals their entire lives, and they've been handled a lot by humans, and they've got a routine that they've lived their whole lives, so they're very, very adaptable to home life. And again, greyhounds, they sleep about 18 hours a day, so they just lay around quite a bit. You don't need to exercise them like people think you might have to. If you walk your dog like you would a greyhound, like any other dog you'd have in your home, that's plenty of exercise, and they make great pets.
Yeah, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. We actually have a retired greyhound. Her name is Tiny Hug, and when you say couch potato, I can definitely see it. I mean, this morning I was letting my dog Camo outside. He's a pit bull, and like he was running around like crazy. But she just looked at me like, I don't want to get up today, which, I mean, that's valid. But it's just very silly when you say that, because, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's almost like they run all the energy out, and now they're here to vibe, and that's totally valid. I'm not actually sure if you remember this, but I actually spoke with you before in sixth grade to inquire about the history of greyhound racing. It has been nice to hear from you again, and thank you for tuning in. At that time, you were the director of the racing operations at the Wheeling Island Racetrack. Would you be able to tell me about how you acquired this role and the obligations that came with it?
Yeah, again, I was working at a track in Alabama at the time, and believe it or not, I got a phone call from your father, who told me that there was a position open at the track in Wheeling, and he thought I would be perfect for it, and that would I mind if he threw my name out there for consideration. And the next thing I know, I got a call from Wheeling Island, and they asked me if I'd be interested in come up there and taking over the racing department. And after some back and forth interviews and visits, I took the job, and basically it entailed just running the paramutual racing operations for the track itself. You know, Wheeling Island has a big casino and a showroom and lots of other things going on, but they also have, they started out as a paramutual racetrack before any of that came. And so racing is very important to the city of Wheeling and the track, the ownership of the track itself. And so I went out and tried to make the racing product that we offered and the simulcast product that we had out there as best I could. And I was there for about three and a half years and then was offered the position that I'm currently in now. And it was a move that I made to get a little closer to back home. And so I've been back here in the NGA in Abilene now for close to 11 years.
And it's funny how things come full circle. I mean, my dad reaching out to you, inquiring about the position, you're being able to get it. Eventually down the road, it lets me talk to you. I believe it was for a social studies project. I was trying to learn about just the general history of greyhound racing, and I remember going to you and asking you about it, and you provided a lot of really good insight back then. And I do appreciate that. I remember actually making it to, I think I went to Charleston actually for the social studies fair. So it was nice to have that come full circle that I got to meet you at that point too. And now I'm getting to talk with you again, like several years down the road, to inquire more about you and what you do. From your experiences in the greyhound industry, what advice do you think you would give to students who are trying to apply for jobs?
Well, I would say just be honest, be upfront with folks. Nobody likes to hear a long-winded resume or all your great, your great attributes. Just be honest. Be honest and work hard. Put your head down and work hard, and be honest with the people you're working with and for.
That's a very good explanation. I feel like a lot of people get hung up in details of, oh, I have to over-explain how I do this, that, and that, and the other, and how I'm really super overqualified. But I feel like at the end of the day, that kind of diminishes your efforts, because, I mean, I'm sure employers, and you might have like experience with this, but I feel like employers probably look at like your skill set, and they probably just want a simple, frank, straightforward answer about it. And it's good to have things be simple and straightforward like that. A bit off topic, but I guess in still regard to your experience in the Greyhound industry, if you had to pick one moment from your time in the industry, what would you say is your biggest accomplishment?
Well, I would say back in the day, I put together what was called at the time the Great American Greyhound Futurity. And it was the first ever of its kind race that was put together this way, and a whole different format to the world of greyhound racing. It had been something that had been done in horse racing for many years, but never even touched in the greyhound industry. And it took me about a year and a half to write all the rules and get it organized and then put it together, and then about another half a year to get all the entries together and everybody to participate. And we finally got it together, and it became one of the world's richest greyhound races, and actually was the first ever greyhound race to be shown live on national television. It aired on ESPN2 at the time, and that was a pretty proud moment and a pretty big accomplishment for something that had never been done before. And I can't say I did it all myself, but I did a lot of it myself, but I had a good team with me that helped me to get it, to accomplish it, and I was real proud the day we got on national television.
Yeah, I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment. I mean, being able to get Greyhounds, like the industry itself, its name out there and known, I feel like that's, like, huge. I mean, I remember myself, I'd always, like, walk around, like, my house, and we would always have, like, the Greyhound races, like recording, like, taping around the house. And it's cool that you got to be a part of that milestone of finally getting its foot in the door on national TV. So that's amazing. That's, like, really big. I guess on the regard of, like publicity and like being televised, I know greyhound racing as a whole has received like national pushback from legislation and other organizations. How do you personally address this pushback?
Well, it's a struggle. We fight the pushback all the time, and the bad part is that most of the information that's being put out against this is phony. I hate to use the term fake news because that's so cliche these days, but most of it is. It's old rhetoric that's been around for 40, 50 years. It doesn't apply anymore. It's not true. But people get out and say it enough, and other people believe it, and you're always, fighting someone against it. So we run a very clean and honest and upfront sport, and we have good people in our sport that do the right thing. And every industry has their bad apples, and we've had them, and we probably will have them in the future. But for the most part, generally, we have great people in this business who do the right thing, and we try and put out a good, honest product for everybody. And it's been very successful. We've lost a lot of battles, but we've won a lot of battles fighting against people that don't want us around. But we'll keep doing it, and we just present the right side of the story and hope that we get listened to.
Of course. And I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about with like presenting the right side of the story. I mean, I remember when I was younger, to support my dad and to support just the business in general, like the industry, I would go to like the courts. Like I forget where it was. I want to say it was Charleston we went to, like a protest, and there were people with signs and shirts, and like it really is just about presenting the right side of the story. And I do hope that people listen and understand that like what you are all doing is not wrong. It's just unfortunately misinformation, like you said, that's being spread about. But I'm glad to hear that you have the determination and the rest of your colleagues and just everyone else in the industry has the determination to push past, because at the end of the day, you know what you're doing is right. But it's just a matter of redirecting people to what is the truth, what you guys are doing. And my final question before we go to our little break is just an overall, I guess, look back and reflection on your career. Out of all of the moments in your career, what do you feel like is a valuable lesson that you learned?
Well, again, not to be too cliche, but I think what I've learned overall, there wasn't one thing, but it's just to treat people like you'd want to be treated. If you're honest with people and you treat them well, generally you'll get that in return. And I guess that's all you can ask is to be honest and kind, and hopefully everybody does the same to you.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with the golden rule. I feel like the golden rule can really get you far through life. I mean, you have respect for others, they treat you in that same respect, and you're able to go about your day and you're able to accomplish a lot more when you have that mutual respect. So, I mean, although it is cliche, it's still around for a reason. So I completely understand where you're coming from with that. And with that, we concluded the first half of our interview with Mr. Gartland. We will take a short break and then come right back in the second half of the interview. Please stay tuned as we will be discussing his plans for retirement and future goals.
Hear ye, hear ye. The noble king of West Liberty University has spoken. The king has blessed us with the gift of WGLZ 91.5. It bestows upon us ballads of old and exciting tales of new. Carry these glad tidings to thy neighbors and thy kin. We shall be known as College Radio and be passionately vocal.
Hello, West Liberty. My name is Allie, and you are listening to WGLZ 91.5. We are College Radio, and we are passionately vocal. For those of you who have just tuned in, welcome. Today we are meeting with the Executive Director of the National Greyhound Association, Jim Gartland. We will now be learning about Mr. Gartland's future plans and goals as he intends to retire at the end of this year. Let's get right back into the interview. So, Mr. Gartland, I heard from my dad, and later from you, that you plan to retire at the end of this year. If you don't mind me asking, what prompted this decision?
Well, after 51 or 50-plus years in the ground industry and working a lot of days, nights, weekends, and holidays, I finally kind of looked at myself and said, you need to take some time and take some time for yourself and enjoy your family and some freedom while you still have years left. So I figured I'd given, like I said, 50-plus years of my life to this business, and I think I've done it all and seen it all about this time. So while I have some time and have the wherewithal to be able to do it, my wife and I both decided to retire this year and spend some time traveling and visiting with our kids and our families and enjoy the time we have left.
Of course, yeah. And I mean, you've had many achievements in the career, and I'm sure I appreciate it, and a lot of other people in the industry appreciate what you do and the accomplishments. And even outside of that, just I'm sure being around you, people appreciate that company, because I mean, at the end of the day, you were the executive director of the NGA. You've brought forth a lot of different contributions, but I mean, as you said, Life is short. Life goes by really fast. So I'm glad that you're taking the time. You said you and your wife are retiring, that you're going to take the time to kind of just enjoy the rest of the time. Because, I mean, life is sweet. You have to take in those moments. Would you be able to tell me about your family? Because I'm pretty sure off the air you've mentioned that you're married and you have 3 kids. And I know you said you like to visit them. Would you be able to tell me a bit about them?
Yeah, my wife and I have 3 children. 2 of them live in Denver, and one of them lives in Kansas City, and they're all grown now. Grown up, have careers themselves, and are all doing very well for themselves. I don't know how we got so lucky that we managed to have 3 that are doing so well. And we've got an attorney and an engineer and a One's a patient advocate for a company. So they, like I said, they do very well. We don't get to see them enough. And again, with as busy as I was in my career, I missed a lot of things in their childhood, and I'm sure you can relate to that with your dad. But anyway, it's good that we can go back and see them. We still have brothers and sisters in the Colorado area. We're about the only two from our families that left home out of Colorado. So we're going to spend a lot of time back there. We're going to stay here in Abilene, and I'll still help out here at the NGA on occasion. But mostly we'll be heading back, traveling to see family and friends, and seeing a little bit of the country too.
Of course, yeah, and I'm glad that you're able to take that time to like spend time with your family, because I mean, as you mentioned, I know from experience that it can be a very busy, time-consuming field. So I'm glad that you're able to find that time to spend with your family, with your like with your wife, your kids. You mentioned that you were going to travel and see the countryside. Did you have any like locations in specific that you guys wanted to see?
Well, there's a lot of places we'd love to see. We've been overseas a couple times, but we'd sure like to get back over to Europe and if we can, and if we can afford it in these days. But otherwise, it might just be hopping into the car and heading to mountains somewhere, or down to Missouri to the lakes we haven't been to, or maybe back out to West Virginia to visit friends that we made while we were there. So I think it's going to be the kind of the inexpensive car trips that you can make. And there's parts of the country that, although we've moved a lot and been around a lot, there's still a lot of things in the U.S. we haven't seen. And I'm sure we'd like to do a lot of that as well as travel out of the country. So we're actually heading to, in December, going down to Mexico for a week for a little R&R. So that'll be nice.
Oh, that sounds really nice. I hope you all enjoy that. I do have like one final question that I wanted to ask you, and it is like a reflective, I guess, because you mentioned that you were still planning to be involved in the NGA, but I wanted to give you a bit of a platform. I mean, you'll likely still have contact with the people in like the Greyhound industry, but I wanted to give you a little bit of a platform to, I guess, project a message to those who are maybe looking into getting into the Greyhound industry, or who maybe are in the Greyhound industry, if there was like a final message that you wanted to put out to those people.
Well, yeah, it's mostly just keep doing the right thing. That's kind of where everybody is now. The care of the animal is first and foremost, and taking care of them is the priority. And just keep fighting the good fight. Don't let the naysayers and the haters get you down, and keep going, moving forward, and things will be all right. You just gotta keep working hard and making sure we're doing the right thing.
And that's very important to keep going and stay strong. And I'm glad that you've spread that message of determination. I'm pretty sure my dad said he was going to be listening live. So hello, Dad, if you're listening. and who knows, this might reach other people that are in the Greyhound industry, maybe people who are considering to be in the Greyhound industry. So I wanted to make sure that I gave you that platform to talk about that. And with that, we are all out of time for today's interview with the Executive Director of the NGA, Jim Gartland. Thank you again, Mr. Gartland, for taking the time to call into the radio station and chat with me. As I mentioned at the start of the interview, it was nice to hear from you again. I hope that you and your family are able to have a lovely time together during your retirement. I think you said you're going to Mexico in December. I hope that goes well as well. Thank you as well to all of our listeners who tuned in to today's interview to hear Mr. Gartland's story. Whether you are listening in on your phone or the car radio, your time is appreciated. My name is Allie, and you have been listening to WGLZ 91.5. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal.